This is Africa Tech Kin with Danny That Guy. Logging into biggest tech stories in Zimbabwe, Africa, and the world, right here on ZFM Stereo.
Welcome to the Africa Tech Kin, right here on ZFM Stereo, my station, your weekly premier technology show, where we break down the tech news from the past week from Zimbabwe, Africa, and the globe. And we, of course, try to figure out what it means for you and me. I'm your host and your guide through the technology streets. My name is Danny That Guy, and let's see what we got on the lineup for the show today. First of all, the ICT Ministry has told government ICT directors to tear down the walls, as it were. And she has announced a new law that could finally stop you carrying the same birth certificate from office to office to office. We're going to unpack that. Then we're going to take a look at carbon credits. Perhaps you've heard that phrase before. What are they? How do they work in Zimbabwe? What's our complicated history with them? And why the Ministry of Environment is publicly fighting the world's biggest carbon registry this week? We're going to talk about Quest Motors in Mutare, who are about to start assembling electric vehicles. Yep, you heard that right. Electric vehicles. And then across the border, we're going to talk about the University of Cape Town that has built an AI model that understands all 11 South African languages. And there's a Zimbabwean on that team. Apple is paying out $250 million because Siri couldn't deliver on its promises. Perhaps you could be entitled to getting some of that money. Anthropic signed a deal to put data centers in space. Nope, not a joke. And we're going to talk about some AI layoffs as well. Something that has been a trending conversation for a while. Companies like Amazon, Oracle, Meta, Microsoft have laid off tens of thousands of people. Why? And is AI coming for your job? All of that on the show today, and of course, we want you to be part of the show. Please drop in your contributions via WhatsApp if you're listening to this live on radio. The number is 0772-168-045, route 1 straight into the studio here at ZFM Stereo Studios in Harare. Or if you're listening to this on demand, perhaps via our podcasts, where you can just search for ZFM Stereo Current Affairs to catch every single episode, or watch this live when you subscribe to ZFM Stereo on YouTube, where you can watch my non-AI generated face on YouTube, then please, you can also use the hashtag AfricaTechKin. That's K-I-N, because as we often say on this show, we're all a family and technology is what connects us. Okay, so let's get into our first story then, shall we? We got news this past week that the government is going to have to implement ICT integrations into all departments. At the inaugural ICT Directors Workshop in Kariba this past week, the Minister of ICT, Postal and Courier Services, Honorable Tatenda Mavetera, stood in front of all the ICT directors in government and basically said that they had to start pushing integrations. That workshop was held under the theme, Charting a Coherent Roadmap for Digital Government. And the minister said, "My first charge to you directors is to tear down the walls. Let us be honest, we suffer from silo syndrome. Systems that cannot talk to each other, forcing a citizen to provide the same birth affidavit six times to six different departments." Yep, that is a problem. The fact that we have to provide the same documents to the same government, just in a different department over and over again. I think every Zimbabwean listening knows what she's talking about. So really, when you go to register a company, that's a separate system. When you go to ZIMRA for your tax clearance, that's again a different system. When you need your EMA certificate, a different system. Register your vehicle at CVR, again, a different system. When you're applying for a passport, again, a different system. None of these systems talk to each other very well. So you're basically carrying the same paperwork from department to department over and over again. You're filling in forms over and over again. And I don't know about you, I hate filling in forms. You're going to have to fill in your ID number five different times to get these various documents. So this is what the minister is referring to as silo syndrome. The minister announced a specific tool, a government service bus, which is basically the digital plumbing that allows the different ministries' databases to securely talk to one another. So when CVR needs to verify your identity, it can ping Home Affairs without you having to bring in your documents. When ZIMRA needs your company status, it can ping the company's office, and so on. She goes on to say, speaking on procurement, one ministry buys laptops at three times the price of another ministry. We purchase different incompatible software for the same basic functions. This is a hemorrhage of public funds and it stops today. So, a new whole-of-government harmonized ICT procurement framework is being introduced. There'll be no major ICT spend without central oversight, and this is supposed to stop this duplication. This is obviously going to affect all the ministries, But in your and I's day-to-day life, think about the effect that it could have in the Ministry of Home Affairs and Cultural Heritage when we're having to deal with passports, IDs, birth and death certificates, driver's licenses, vehicle registration. Also the Ministry of Finance, which has to deal with ZIMRA, tax clearance, customs, import duties. The Ministry of Justice with the CIPZ, company and business registration and trademarks. The Ministry of Public Service with NASA, as well as pensions and social security. The Ministry of Health, birth and death certificates, vaccination records, local government, including your council rates, water bills, and so on. Imagine if all of these were properly integrated. The average Zimbabwean could save days every year instead of having to go to each office individually. Businesses would save real money. And think about all the loopholes that would be plugged. There were some other big announcements from the minister at this workshop. A new Digital Government and Data Act, which is being drafted. This proposed law would make interoperability mandatory. It would actually prohibit government departments from asking you for information that another government department already has. Also, on cybersecurity, the minister said, a cyber attack on a ministry database is no longer a simple IT incident. It is an attack on the Republic itself. So there will be a new sectoral cybersecurity response center that will be established as part of the e-government unit. She also mentioned an AI skills accelerator program for the public sector workers, which will be in partnership with universities. So a lot of changes in government that are proposed. Let's see if these will be implemented. And of course, if you're smart and you're an entrepreneur or a business owner, a developer who's listening, look at this green field where your skills are needed. The moment government opens up these interoperable APIs through the government service bus, think about all the things that will be needed. Identity verification services for fintech, KYC platforms for the banks and mobile money platforms, digital onboarding for insurance, lending, education, and various other sectors, compliance automation tools for businesses, AI-powered services for the public sector. All of these will become necessary. These are already happening in other places like Kenya. It already has these kind of services. It's called M-Service in Kenya. Estonia built an entire digital economy around this. So we could be moving in that direction as well. Now, again, we have to take this with a pinch of salt because this is not the first time that the Zimbabwean government has announced this kind of thing. The 2022 to 2027 ICT policy was already supposed to implement some of these things. Even the minister herself acknowledged this and said, we have the policies, we have the infrastructure, we have the skills program. What remains is disciplined implementation. So as usual, it's all about the execution when it comes to these ICT implementations. Okay, let's move on to our next story. Have you heard of carbon credits? Let's talk about it. The Ministry of Environment, Climate and Wildlife has come out this week against the Gold Standard Foundation over Zimbabwean carbon credits. Okay, let's talk about what this is. Let's start with the concept of what carbon credits are. A carbon credit is like a permission slip. One credit represents one ton of carbon dioxide that has been either removed from the atmosphere or prevented from going into the atmosphere. So imagine a factory in Germany, for example. It is polluting the atmosphere, so it legally has to offset its emissions. So it could either reduce its own pollution, which is an expensive and slow process, or it could pay someone else to reduce emissions on its behalf. So that payment buys a carbon credit. So those credits come from projects that could either plant or protect forests, that could distribute clean cook stoves in rural communities, for example, build renewable energy like solar, wind, or hydro, or capture methane from landfills or livestock. So that factory that we gave as an example in Germany could pay a Zimbabwean company that has theoretically offset one ton of carbon dioxide emissions. So the community here gets the income, the planet gets less carbon overall, and the factory continues. I mean, that's the theory, right? Well, here's some facts you may not know. Zimbabwe is one of the top three carbon credit producers in Africa. In fact, about 13% of the continent's supply of carbon credits is coming from Zimbabwe, behind Kenya and Gabon. Our biggest project was the Kariba Red Plus project, nearly 785,000 hectares of forest in the Zambezi Valley, roughly the size of Manicaland province. That was developed by a Zimbabwean company called Carbon Green Investments, with credits sold by a Swiss firm called South Pole. So over a decade, it generated more than $100 million in revenue. But that project blew up. Back in 2023, the New Yorker magazine and other outlets exposed that Kariba was vastly overestimating the deforestation it was preventing. In May that year, our then information minister declared all carbon credits null and void. The whole market crashed in Zimbabwe. But government then rebuilt, Statutory Instrument 48 of 2025 was passed. The Zimbabwe Carbon Markets Authority, or ZICMA, was set up. And in May last year, Zimbabwe launched the world's first blockchain-based national carbon registry. Every credit was then meant to be traceable, every retirement permanent. In September 2025, the global verifier Vera confirmed that 57%, over 15 million, of Kariba's credits had been issued in excess, which means the journalists were right and there was an overestimation that was going on. But that wasn't the end of it. In October last year, a Zimbabwean cookstove project called Cicada Carbon became the first private sector initiative globally to get what's called a corresponding adjustment under Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, which is the gold standard of integrity. That credit is supposed to count towards the most rigorous global compliance markets, including CORSIA, the UN's aviation offset program. CORSIA, that's the Carbon Offsetting and Reduction Scheme for International Aviation, is the global system that requires airlines to buy carbon credits to offset their emissions. It's overseen by ICAO, the UN's aviation body. This week, the Ministry of Environment, Climate and Wildlife issued out a statement that said the decision by the Gold Standard Foundation, in light of the ICAO Technical Advisory Board recommendations, to delay the recognition of their eligibility is an open affront to the objectives of CORSIA and risks causing significant financial harm to innocent Zimbabwean communities. Okay, what's happening here? Well, the Gold Standard Foundation, which is one of the world's main carbon credit registries, has delayed labeling Zimbabwe's CORSIA credits as eligible. And the reason that is given is something called the Continuous Maintenance Rule, which is about how host countries track and adjust for credits over time. The ministry here in Zimbabwe is arguing that Zimbabwe has built exactly the kind of robust national tracking infrastructure that the Paris Agreement requires, but ICAO's rigid technical interpretation is now penalizing us for taking our time to build that. Ministry says, we urgently call for the immediate harmonization of these frameworks so that African nations are no longer unjustly punished for leading the way in transparent, high-integrity climate action. So, the government here in Zimbabwe is essentially saying, Zimbabwe followed the rules, Zimbabwe built the registry that was required, Zimbabwe completed every requirement, the credits are valid, legally distinct units on Gold Standard's own registry, and now ICAO, this aviation regulator, is telling us that our credits don't count. This is a big deal because the global voluntary carbon market is worth around $2 billion at its peak. The compliance market, CORSIA being a key part of it, is much bigger, growing faster, and Africa's share could hit $6 billion per year by 2030. For entrepreneurs, project development, monitoring, verification, community engagement, technology platforms, this is an entire industry that barely exists locally. Communities in Binga, Nyaminyami, Hurungwe, Mbire, the ones who live in the Kariba area, they barely saw any of that original $100 million that came to Zimbabwe. So we have to fix that part because the moral case for this market needs to exist. Second, this dispute with the Gold Standard, which seems like just a technical squabble, is really more of a test on whether the global carbon market is genuinely going to reward African communities and the countries here that are doing that work for offsetting the emissions in those countries. Actually, the world of carbon credits is a very interesting and quite a technical one, I must say. This is definitely something that we need to explore again in future. Okay, next story, a quick one. We got news this week that Quest Motor Manufacturing in Mutare is set to begin assembling electric and new energy vehicles. This was announced during a factory tour by Manicaland Minister of State Advocate Mishek Mugadza. The Quest GM, Carl Fernandez, said the company has already put in $1.2 million in factory upgrades, and more special equipment is coming by August. We are looking to manufacture three Chinese-made models, the BAW Mini Car, the Skyworth SUV, and the GAC Aeon V. Assembly is meant to start in August. Quest also says that they'll roll out a nationwide fast charging network. Fernandez says that this could increase employment at the plant by 300 to 500%. This is huge news. If, and it is a big if, Quest delivers on this charging network, Zimbabwe leapfrogs a stage of the EV transition. Right now, we are importing secondhand cars. Some of them are 10, 15 plus years old. If we start assembling new EVs locally, we could be changing the entire economics of motor vehicles in the country. Not to mention the new jobs in Manicaland and the ecosystem around EVs, including the charging networks, battery servicing, the specific maintenance that's needed for EVs, and so on. Now, once again, everything is about execution. Quest has been making several big announcements for years and not always delivering at the scale that it's been announced. So let's take a look to see how this will happen when it gets to August. Okay, at this point, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got some more technology stories to come. But for now, if any of these stories are interesting, or if you would like to contribute, please drop a message to 0772-168-045 on WhatsApp. That's the in-studio number that I'll be able to see. Or you can use the hashtag AfricaTechKin on your favorite social media platform of choice, because this show is available on demand on YouTube and on our podcast. Just search for ZFM Stereo Current Affairs. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we got some more stories.
Serving you hits.
Just the hits.
I got family at the end of the day. That's all I need.
Yo, what's going on? This is Drizzy Drake. This is my station.
Family. Your hit music station.
Z.
Welcome back to the Africa Tech Kin on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. My name is Danny That Guy. We've got some more tech stories to discuss from this past week. Let's head on over the border right now and talk about some regional stories. This one is coming through from Zansi, but there is a Zimbabwean angle. A team of researchers at the University of Cape Town has just released an AI language model called Mzansi LM. And this is a big deal because it's the first publicly available AI language model trained on all 11 of South Africa's official written languages in one system. That includes Zulu, Xhosa, Afrikaans, English, but also the ones that have normally been ignored by mainstream AI models, like Ndebele, Sepedi, Setswana, Siswati, Venda, Tsonga, Sesotho. 9 out of these 11 languages are what researchers call low resource, meaning there's almost no digital training data for AI to learn from. So when you try to use ChatGPT or Gemini or any of these other ones in Sepedi, for example, you often get nonsense back. But UCT built a dataset called Mzansi Text, which is bigger than anything that's come before for these languages specifically, and trained a model from scratch on it. The Mzansi LM team consists of 4 researchers, 3 South Africans and 1 Zimbabwean. Woohoo! Zimbabwe is in there. His name is Simbarashe Mawere. Simbarashe, who did his education in Zimbabwe before moving over to South Africa to UCT. He's now an assistant lecturer there at UCT, and his research focus is natural language processing for Nguni languages, which of course includes Ndebele and the other languages that we spoke about. Looking at some of his history, last year he published some work with another student in South Africa, Kyle Marquard, which looked at deep learning approaches to morphological parsing for Nguni languages. And that work fed directly into this new Mzansi LM model. It's nice to see this young Zimbabwean researcher who's helping to shape the foundation of African language AI. And really, shout out to this Cape Town team out in UCT who were able to build this Mzansi LM. So, we've got a working language model that is using one of Zimbabwe's official languages, Ndebele. It's the same data, the same modeling approach. So now we have that corpus of material that exists, if you will. Also worth noting that this is an open source model. So anyone can download it, anyone can build on it, anyone can use it. So if you want to plug into this Mzansi LM, it's available online. Just search for it. You'll be able to find it. You can download it and start building tools for our own market here in Zimbabwe. Okay, let's move to some international news. This one is coming through from Silicon Valley. Apple has agreed to pay $250 million to settle a class action lawsuit in California. The allegation is that Apple misled consumers about the artificial intelligence capabilities of Siri. Now, you might remember this. Back in June 2024, Apple announced Apple Intelligence, a suite of AI features for the iPhone 16, with the headline being a radically smarter Siri. And they ran a bunch of ads across TV, the internet, and so on that showed Siri doing things that it had never been capable of doing before. Understanding context, acting on personal information, taking actions across apps. When the iPhone 16 launched back in September 2024, those features were supposed to ship with the phone. But anyone who did use the iPhone 16 can almost immediately tell you that Siri did none of those things. In March 2025, 6 months after the launch, Apple quietly delayed the Smart Siri features. The ads were pulled. The features have still, to this day, not been fully shipped. So a man named Peter Landshift filed a lawsuit back in March 2025, claiming that Apple advertised something it knew wasn't ready and charged premium prices for this new product and used this to market the product, but the consumers were deceived. Apple denied any wrongdoing. However, the company did put out a statement saying Apple has reached a settlement to resolve claims related to the availability of 2 additional features. We resolved this matter to stay focused on doing what we do best. So Apple settled and they agreed to pay $250 million to settle. This settlement covers 36 million devices. And if you have an iPhone 15 Pro, iPhone 15 Pro Max, all the iPhone 16 models, 16, 16E, 16 Plus, 16 Pro and 16 Pro Max, And if they were purchased in the United States between 10 June 2024 and 29 March 2025, then you're eligible to claim some of that $250 million. So the claim window isn't open yet. It will be soon. But the question is, if you bought an iPhone on those dates, can you get paid from this? Well, this is a US class action settlement. So for you to file a claim, you have to have purchased your phone in the US during that qualifying window. If you bought it here in Zimbabwe or in Dubai or the UK or anywhere else outside the US, then chances are you will not qualify unless that phone itself was bought from the US in that time period. If you bought an eligible iPhone while traveling in the US during that window, or if you have family in the diaspora with eligible iPhones bought in the US, then you might be eligible. But as you heard, there were so many devices, it's actually not going to be that much. The base payment is roughly $25 per eligible device. That figure could rise to $95 per device, but that's only if other people don't claim. But the biggest story here is this is probably the most expensive AI marketing lesson that we've had to date. Companies have been promising AI features that are actually not available, and now Apple has to pay $250 million for that. To be fair, that's couch money for Apple. Okay, another quick story internationally. This is a bit of a wild one. Two rival companies, Anthropic and SpaceX AI, have apparently signed a deal. So a bit of context, when we say SpaceX AI, earlier this year, Elon Musk merged his AI company xAI with SpaceX to form a new entity called SpaceX AI. The whole story behind that is another wild story, but that's not what we're talking about today. So the data center that exists that was originally used by xAI to train its Grok chatbot is now part of SpaceX AI, as you've heard. And Anthropic has signed a deal with SpaceX AI to lease this data center. This deal gives Anthropic access to this entire compute capacity at SpaceX AI's Colossus One data center, which is over 300 megawatts of computing power running over 220,000 NVIDIA chips. Here's a wild part of this deal. Anthropic and SpaceX have also said that they want to build multiple gigawatts of compute capacity in space. Yes, data centers in orbit. The claim is that there's unlimited solar energy 24 hours a day, no clouds, no night, no rain. Cooling is free because space is cold, so you could theoretically build at scale a huge data centers in space, something that you probably couldn't do here on Earth. So the plan is to start rolling that out. Bit of a wild idea, let's see if it works, but something interesting I thought to mention for you. Maybe we too could be able to plug into this potentially limitless source of power. Okay, let's wrap it up with our final story, and this one is about AI layoffs. Every week there seems to be news about thousands and thousands of people who are getting fired, and it is because of AI. Some sources say over 92,000 tech workers have been laid off in 2026 alone because of AI. By mid-April, OneTracker counted over 150,000 jobs gone. And this is major companies, like Amazon. About 30,000 corporate jobs have been cut since October last year. Oracle reportedly quietly emailed thousands of employees in late March, telling them that their jobs were eliminated with immediate effect. Some reports say that it was up to 30,000 people who were fired, or 20% of the global workforce. Again, reasons given seem to be about AI. Meta announced 8,000 job cuts, about 10% of its workforce. Again, AI. Microsoft, up to 20,000 cuts combined. Snap, 1,000 layoffs. Salesforce, 4,000. And the list goes on and on. Just this past week, Coinbase cut 14% of its workforce, and Cloudflare laid off over 1,100 employees. Now, these are not people being fired because the economy is bad. No, these companies are reportedly spending hundreds of billions of dollars on AI development. They've got the money. Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Meta are all projected to spend around $725 billion on AI infrastructure in 2026 alone. These companies are reportedly healthier than ever because of AI. But there is a warning about something called AI washing. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman pushed back on the trend of layoffs recently because he accused some companies of AI washing layoffs. In other words, using AI as a public excuse for what's actually just cost cutting. A Bloomberg analysis suggested that roughly half of AI attributed layoffs result in the same roles being rehired offshore at a lower salary. That's not AI. That's labor repricing. So this is obviously a big story because most people, when they hear about so many jobs being lost because of AI, the question is my job next? Am I about to lose my job because of AI? Okay, let me try to give an honest answer here. If your work is repetitive, structured, can be done from a screen, yes, there is a risk that you might become redundant because of AI. Things like data entry, first-line customer service, junior accounting, basic legal review, routine code, these could be replaced by AI. But the people who learn to work with AI, those are the ones who are going to be productive workers even in those fields. In fact, most studies show that AI tools are nowhere close to replacing human beings in most fields, despite what a lot of the marketing from these companies says. However, the risk is real. If you work in BPO, call centers, remote work, and so on, it is possible that AI might be able to start doing some of your jobs. So for now, the key is learn the tools, see what you can use, where you can use them, understand how to use them in your job, and you won't be redundant in most companies. All right, so that's been our show this week. If you missed any of tonight's show, please don't forget that you can catch the podcast almost immediately after it airs on radio. It's available on the ZFM Stereo Current Affairs podcast. Just search for that on any of your favorite podcast apps. Or you can watch this show on YouTube shortly after it airs on radio, where my non-AI generated face is available for you to watch at 1.5 times speed as I do. So please continue to interact with the show. The hashtag is AfricaTechKin. Next week, we'll have some more technology news. But for now, Current Affairs continues on ZFM Stereo. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, we got Patience Musa. So for now, my name is Danny That Guy. It's been a pleasure doing the show with you. I'll be back again next week. Until then, bye-bye.
Tune in next time for Africa Tech Kin on ZFM Stereo, discussing all things tech.